We are kicking off the month of April with a podcast, of course, episode number 41. I am joined with Phil Vicinanza. Phil, we're back again.
Yes, we are. We never left, but we're back again. So here we are.
Back every week.
Yes.
Well, it's a great Friday night and a great guest we have on the podcast. Like you said in our description, a veteran in the monster truck industry, but also a real veteran. So, Phil, you want to introduce our guest tonight?
Well, of course. You know, we're all about telling the stories of monster trucks on the West Coast. And, you know, when we got started here, this was definitely one of the big names on our list that just fits the mold and checks all the boxes on the criteria. He's been driving for almost three decades in monster trucks. And as you mentioned, and it's on the description, he's a veteran of the monster truck industry. And he's also a veteran of the United States Army. Very honored to have him. Got some nicknames. A lot of them are on the trucks. A lot of people know him as Ranger Joe. Tonight's guest from the Airborne Ranger Monster Truck, Joe Cypher.
Welcome to the podcast. How are you doing tonight?
Good, man. How are you guys doing? Nice introduction. I like that.
Thank you. We try to show everybody up, make them feel classy, and you know, kick off the show right.
More old. Oh, yeah.
Make me feel old. Yeah. Some of them are oldies. That's good. Oldies
look good. Kind of mix everything in there. So we're going to kick it off a little bit differently tonight. And usually we started off with, you know, how did you get started in motorsports? But you have a lot of background before that. So I got to ask, what events led up to you creating the monster truck team?
Oh, you know, when I get asked why I did monster trucks, one thing is I was always a truck guy. Number two, I always played with Hot Wheels. And number three, you know, my favorite toys, I guess, with that said, the other toy was Army Men and Hot Wheels. So, you know, first came the Army and becoming an Airborne Ranger. And then, of course, I got lucky, you know, with Monster Jam asking me to be a part of their Hot Wheel deal back in the day when it first started out. So, you know, the doors were wide open and you tend to take, you know, kick the door open when you have to, you know. So I got lucky. We'll call it luck, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, certainly luck has been on your side for so many years. You know, obviously, thank you for your service as an Army Ranger. What made you decide to even join the U.S. Army to begin with?
That's, you know, when I'm asked that, too, I just, I feel whether you're a Navy, SEAL, Ranger, Pararescue, Marine Recon, I think you have a calling in you to become that person, become that soldier. And, that's what I based mine off. I just had a calling that I wanted to do. A lot of the males in my on my dad's side, even my, including my dad, are all Marines. But I wanted to do something a little bit different, you know. And I had that calling in me. And I knew what I could do, you know. And I knew I could make that happen. So.
Yeah, and it's your calling, you know, just to kind of give a cliff notes, maybe not everybody that listens has been in the military, have been around some of those dynamics. You know, what was like the day-to-day being an Army Ranger?
Oh, I think it was a blast. I mean, you learn a lot about yourself when you go through RIP, and it's got a different name now. It's called RASP now, but in RIP, it's 3 weeks of hell. You get an hour, you get released at 5 o'clock in the morning, and you first call's at 6 o'clock in the morning. So you get an hour, but in that hour, you have to shower, you have to rig your stuff for a chopper blast or a bird blast or for the next day, because you're usually going to be jumping. And that's, you got to practice that, you know. And so it keeps you on your toes, where you get, by the second week, you're having 45 minutes of sleep a day, and you're a walking zombie by the second week. And the third week, man, you know, it's a, we started with three platoons and we wound up with one platoon when we graduated. So the attrition rate's, you know, 66 to 75%, you know, so 60 to 75%. So
what were some of the areas that you served in? Did you go overseas, or what were some of the places that you served?
No, I didn't serve. I served here at peacetime stateside, you know, never got a chance to go. Got hurt by the time, Noriega was acting up in Grenada, or, you know, in Panama, really. And second bat got to go down there, my battalion. And actually, they all probably participated, but it kind of sucked. I got the rug pulled out from under me, so to speak. And the rug I was on was a golden rug, you know, and where I wanted to be. And that kind of sucked. But with that said, you take a negative and turn it into a positive. And here comes monster trucks, you know. So I took advantage of that real quick. And of course, dedicated the Airborne Ranger to Army Rangers, past, present, and future. So,
you know, exactly. And I love that attitude, where an accident can, I mean, really just bring a lot of people down. And it really was a second life for you. And so many incredible things. I was reading a lot of the old accolades that you had on your website. Says you were a Gold Cup wheelchair basketball team member, and you went out to Italy. What experience is playing basketball? What's that all about?
Oh, it's fun. Basketball was, I was a wheelchair athlete before I found the monster truck. And that's what I thought I was going to do, you know, is just become a wheelchair athlete and do basketball and a lot of track and swimming. I've done the triathlon and won the triathlon in California. And so, you know, but then I found the truck and I'm like, hey, yeah, you know, this is a new challenge for me. I want to see if I can drive this thing with hand controls, you know? So that's what I did. You know, it was like an evolution after evolution, you know? And like you said, when I first got hurt August 18th, I was reborn again, you know, 1988. So I was reborn again to carry a different path.
Also saw it listed here, you're a certified scuba rescue diver. I mean, that's incredible.
I went through the PADI system, you know, and I would crawl in the water. My daughter Layla would watch me disappear into the water, and I'd come back out of the water, you know, with my instructor. And I was going to go to scuba school as a ranger too, you know, and I wanted to learn all that cool stuff, but I thought, well, I'm hurt, but at least I can still crawl in the water, you know. And I adapted to it very quickly and went up through the ranks of PADI, through PADI, the old PADI system, and became a rescue diver as a paraplegic, and accepted as a rescue diver as a paraplegic. And then they wanted me to get my dive master, but I was just, you know, I'll sit here for a while and see, you know, see what we can do with it. And then, of course, you know, got bored with that and moved on, you know.
And you always keep evolving. Make sure anybody who's listening right now live, make sure you share this video all across Facebook. Make sure everybody on your friends list knows that we're sitting here with the one and only Ranger Joe Cypher. So make sure you share this video. Make sure you like this video as well. As we now we're going to dive into a lot of the monster truck talk. Vincent, go ahead. I know you got a great question to kick us off.
Let's dive into, of course, the Airborne Ranger truck. So how did you acquire the chassis? Did you build it or did you buy it?
The chassis was the original Bounty Hunter, and it came out of Dixon, Illinois. And I bought it. I bought the whole system, the hauler, the trailer to haul it on, the hauling tires, the big tires, the truck, spare parts, $50,000. And that's, you know, you can't get 10% of your team for $50,000 anymore, it seems like, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, there again, fell right into the right door. Guy was looking to get out of it, and we went and got it and brought it home. And, you know, eventually we had to change things of it, you know, and bring the truck through a new evolution, you know what I mean, through new chassis, moving the motor to the back, new shocks, new four links, you know, all that stuff comes into play. Besides adding hand controls to it and then being tested by MTRA to get my Class A license was the next challenge, the biggest challenge. So that truck had to be ready for me to be in it.
I think that's what a lot of people recognize Airborne Ranger for, being the first hand-controlled monster truck. Now, based on, you know, from your accent, your mobility isn't, you know, compromisable, where you need to, that's why you need to have hand controls. Mm-hmm. Where do you even start doing something that nobody's ever done before?
Well, I lucked out. And what helped me is I could wear lower leg braces, or AFOs, they call them, but they're braces. They're lower leg braces from the knee down, and that helped me get up and walk around the truck, and it helps me walk every day. But now, you know, getting older, so now I'm starting to use 50% of the braces and 50% of the chair. But, you know, that you just start by, you know, I think the VA helped me a lot when they put hand controls in my personal vehicles, and I learned from that, you know, and I excelled at that. At Palo Alto, California, we went up these mountains, and the guy goes, you know, it takes 4 weeks for the guy to do this. Yeah, he says, I think you're going to do it in two. But the thing is I looked at that as independence. You look at your first wheelchair as independent, makes you more independent. And here comes a car equipped with a hand control, you know, that they help you with. And man, you're independent. And that's what I was looking for. That was the start of getting me letting the horse out of the gate, so to speak, to run around the track, you know. Well, you got to have hand controls. You got to be able to sit on the horse, you know, and guide the horse. So that's that was the basis of taking it from there and moving forward, you know. Just like I said, it seems like it was always an evolution for me.
A constant evolution, especially in a part of the sport like the 90s, where the trucks were really rapidly changing to really become big race vehicles and to get to that next evolution for freestyle. Did you keep any of that in mind when you were rebuilding the Airborne Ranger there, knowing that you're going to be racing and going up against a lot of tough competition?
Oh, yeah, you keep that in the back of your mind. You know, and I learned early on what my truck could do and couldn't do. There was things that, you know, I remember we were in Tacoma, Washington. Bigfoot was up there, and he took first, or I took first or second, whatever it was. And I actually pointed out the window to the promoter, hey, can I freestyle? Can I hit this big jump? And he goes, looks at it, and he shakes his head, go ahead. So I hit it, you know. But I learned that when I came down, I snapped a tire off, you know, and a broken axle, planetary. So you learn that stuff. So, you know, and it teaches you about yourself, but it also teaches you about your equipment, you know, and what you got to do. And we got to change the shocks, or, you know, we got to lighten this up. You know, it had a reverse four link on it when I first got it, which means the four links went from the front of the chassis to the front of the axle. And it was nice because it folded up in the back. Then it was a little bit more straight line drags to where, like you're saying, here comes freestyle. Here comes this evolution of another discipline that I wanted to do. It looked fun, you know. Donuts. I mean, donut. I remember doing my first donut. I was like shaking that I was going to turn the truck over, and I didn't want to turn the truck over. Back then, if you turned the truck over, you were a dum dum, you know. So I didn't want to be a dum dum right away, you know. But you learn what to do and how to change it. And I always wanted to lighten them up. I always lighten them. I put holes in it. Craig Christensen says I'm the holy guy, or my trucks are holy because they got holes in them, you know, and I'm always putting holes in stuff, you know, to lighten it up. But I do it at a, you know, you have to maintain that because you can't let it get out of hand where it's not safe. So.
Yeah. And then that's such a valid point too. And I like how you're mentioning to get everything up to spec, you know, with the MTRA, make sure you're all certified with all the various levels. And eventually, you know, with USHRA Monster Jam,
right.
What's the biggest difference other than the hand controls between that original Airborne Ranger and some of the other top trucks from back in that time frame?
Well, back in that time frame, a lot of people like, you know, any Monster Jam trucks, Greg Digger, and Tom's trucks were very light, you know, and they, to this day, his truck is very light, no matter what anybody says, it's light. And that's the path I wanted to go down, was to take the light path. Because if you can, you know, throw a feather in the air and it comes down, it's not going to hurt itself. You throw a ball in the air and it comes down, yeah, it's going to bounce around, you know? And so there's that theory there, you know, but, you know, you just learn from that. You learn from them guys, you know, you learn from Bigfoot. They were already ahead of the game, you know, they were ahead of the game because they were out there trashing and bashing and, you know, the mean, forget what they called Dennis's nickname of his truck, but I mean, he went out there and he tore it up every night, you know, and that put him on top, you know, he helped the sport. Of course, Bigfoot's helped the sport with the evolution of all their technology too. So
did your competitors have any thoughts on you using hand controls?
I think they were a little, you know, they questioned what I was going to do, and they questioned me, and they might have had questions to MTRA. I proved myself. I mean, they put me through the ringer. I thought they put me through the ringer, you know, compared to a lot of other people that are able-bodied, other drivers. So I just moved on. I didn't care what they said. You know, I didn't want to listen to it. I wanted to prove to them that I could, and I was pretty, you could say demanding when I called them and talked to them about it, you know, and they, I think they knew that I wasn't going to just be out there, you know, causing problems. I was going to get out there and do it right.
That's a great valid point too. And, you know, looking at a lot of the competitors, who were some of the early people that gave you any advice or helped you out right when you were getting started?
You know, Bob Chandler, he was always my hero. You know, if I wanted to be model myself and my team, if I could, after anybody in this sport, it would be them. You know, if I wanted to model myself out like a freestyler, one of the freestylers, it would be, you know, Dennis Anderson. And between those two, I looked up to those two. I looked up to Tom. Tom would come and ask me, what are you going to hit? You know, how are you going to hit this? Because in the early days, if you look at some of those videos, I was crossing things up before Tom was too. But he would come and go, what are you going to do? You know, and I was just like, I'm not going to tell you. You know? You'll see. And then, you know, he kind of like, you know, he grinned about it. He loved it, you know, because he just knew that I was going to do something that he had to talk. But you know what? That made the show that much better. And it moved the sport forward. And I mean, nowadays, look what they're doing nowadays. Holy smokes. Some of them guys got it down that they can stand on one wheel, it seems like, you know, and do stuff. And that's just awesome, you know.
Yeah, the evolution just gets scarier and scarier. You never know where we're going next. But I know when you got started, such a special moment. Do you remember where that first event was, the first time you brought Airborne Ranger out into the public eye? What was going through your mind at that time?
Yeah, it was at the university here, University of Nevada, Reno. That was the first time I brought it out. You know, it still had the old chassis, the old four link, reverse four link under it. And then, man, but the thing is it was a basketball court, you know, at that university. And it was, you hit the throttle and then pretty much in mid flight, you're starting to hit the brakes because, you know, otherwise you're going to hit the wall on the other side, you know, and this is indoors. So I always remember that, but I'm glad it was in my hometown. You know, I'm glad it was here.
Yeah, that's always so special doing events so close, as you know, hometown especially. Those early events, you know, the events just get bigger and bigger, you know, as almost as quick, or, you know, was there a lot of pressure on you right from the get-go to perform?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of pressure. You know, I carried around one of the, you know, the best names in the Army, in my opinion, and I had to live up to that. And that put pressure on me personally, but I accepted that pressure. But I don't think my truck could accept it, you know what I mean? And we learned a lot about it. I mean, we learned a lot about what to change, what to do, beef this up, you know, lighten this up, you know, like I said, another whole evolution with that. But as far as the pressure from promoters, I don't know if they really pressured me so much. But I always wanted to do good at the show. I learned from watching everybody else, you know. I learned what they do. I watched what they work on, what they broke. You know, they may not have seen me, but I was over there checking it out, you know. And you just learn from your mistakes too, you know, besides everybody else's. When you go in the Army, they make an example of one person, and they do that for a reason, so that everybody else learns what that one person did wrong, you know. And you learn really fast what to do and what not to do, you know. So I applied that to monster trucks and just learned and learned and watched and learned. And that's how I evolved, you know. Not that I evolved into, you know, superhero status, but I mean, you know, I evolved and held my own. So, and I think I was good with that. I think I upheld the name, you know.
Got a comment here from Derek P. Dupre. He says, Ranger Joe, been watching you for years. Always loved your truck. Keep on keeping on from one veteran to another.
Cool. Thanks, Derek, man. Appreciate it.
I also see a comment here. I don't want to butcher the name, but we can pull it up here. It says, Ranger Joe is the best monster truck grandpa ever.
Yep. That's That's my son-in-law and my daughter, Layla. They call her Lala because she's in La-La Land all the time.
Oh, my.
Yeah, my grandson and my granddaughter, too, Davina and BJ. BJ, my grandson. So, yeah, they try to go to the shows as much as they can with me and, you know, and be there. I love it when they're there, so.
Yeah, that was going to be a good follow-up there. You know, it's so important, you know, having family behind you. But a lot of times, you know, you're out running around. You don't get to see them so often. And you really build a family on the road. So who were some of the people that made up that Airborne Ranger team that, you know, helped you out along the way?
I had a lot of people around me. The couple that I remember, you know, they had to drive that old hauler. That hauler that I bought was a 10-speed, is a 10-speed stick shift. So, you know, I didn't have I don't have the feet work for that, you know, footwork for that. So I had to hire guys, you know, that had CDLs and could drive and do stuff. And then through the evolution, I got a FL-70 Freightliner motorhome that was a Renegade conversion, but it had an Allison automatic in it. So that way I could drive it. Plus it's, you know, it's licensed as a motorhome. And that is my home. That's where I, you know, I stay when I get on the road and stay on the road, you know. So, you know, and then a lot of the guys I knew, I had two Rangers with me, Kevin DiGiulio and Ross Smith, and they helped out a lot. You know, there was three of us. There was three Rangers then, and that was awesome. You know, that made, I think that put the name on the map a lot, you know, and that was in that evolution of time where, becoming a Hot Wheel and, you know, moving on and advancing the truck and building a ride truck too. You know, Ross was building an Airborne Ranger ride truck because he was a Ranger. So, you know, those are the outstanding people. And right now, one of the most outstanding people I have is a father-son team, and that's Derek Ritter and Anthony Ritter, you know, and the Ritter family. They help me a lot, you know. And so that's the this next evolution of, you know, you got to go through souls too, you know, and I think, you know, Derek and I met for a reason, his son and I met for a reason, you know, so that's where we're at. And those are the people that really have helped along the way.
I love that. I love you mentioned Derek Ritter. That's somebody that we've ran into at the events over the years, and he's still kicking it. So yep. I'm sure we'll weasel him on here at some point down the line. Maybe he's listening. But, you mentioned the other – go ahead.
He's got two chassis sitting right here in the shop. So,
Yeah.
Tell him to kick him in the butt verbally for me. That way he'll get his shit done.
we'll twist his ear. We're good at that. there he is. He says, "Who?
Come on, Derek."
Yeah, that's you.
Yeah. Oh man. Well, hey, we'll get to Derek one of these days. But now we still got Ranger Joe here. So if anybody's got any more questions or anything with Ranger Joe, we're still continuing on. Leading on to the next question here. You were mentioning the other Rangers that were with the team, and I know at one point you had a super truck, a part of the Airborne Ranger team. What was that all about? How did that all come about?
That came about when I started out. Monster trucks were really busy during the autumn through springtime. Come summertime, springtime to summertime, it panned off, at least where I lived here in Reno, Nevada. So I decided to bring out super trucks were getting popular, with NASCAR, and I believe that's what they called them when they first started out. Now I think they rename them after a sponsor series, so we followed along that path and we created a dirt track truck, super truck, and we built it all by hand. I had to go on the road. So I left Ross in charge and Mike McDougall. As a paraplegic friend of mine that I played wheelchair basketball, Mike would go there. He went over there for 3 weeks straight. There he is right there. Yep. And he would go over there 3 weeks straight at my shop, and he worked on that truck. So finally we said, the three of us Rangers turned and looked at each other, and I said, hey, I said, what about putting Mike on in this truck? I said, because I need you two on the road with me. And they're like, "Hua." And hua means yes, hua means no, hua means ranger, hua can mean, it's a word that can mean a lot of stuff. It's in that instant of how you use it as a ranger. But anyway, so we re-agreed upon it. And so we put Mike in that truck, and he took rookie of the year, the first year out in that truck. And he missed taking first place by a couple points. And had he known about a mail-in system of getting extra points if you mail your entry fee in a little bit earlier, he probably would have took first place. But anyway, nonetheless, he did a great job in that truck.
And as your team expands, I know you start changing the looks of the truck. That original scheme, we'll show pictures in a bit. You always had names for all your different looks. That first look was Alpha, then it moved to Bravo. How are you coming up with the names?
The phonetic alphabet of the Army. Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta, and ABCD. That's all that really is. And I didn't want to use, number one, number two, number three. Everybody was using that. I just thought, well, this is a military truck, and it's got one of the best military names on it. So we're going to call this one Alpha. We're going to call this one, the next one, Bravo. The next one, Charlie, Delta. Plus, there's a lot of, like Charlie's Rangers was one of the hardcore Rangers during Vietnam. That were very hardcore guys. They would go in and they would take care of business at all costs, let's just say. And so those abbreviations reminded me of those guys too, I kept with that theme of dedication to the Rangers, through that. And maybe it's just a little bitty old name, but at least, in my heart, that's where I wanted to go. I didn't want to use the numbers. I wanted to use a phonetic alphabet,
And I love that. And I'm happy that you, explained all that, because I don't think maybe a lot of people realize.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that I always want to be different. There's things I hide. I hide stuff in my artwork. The camouflage truck. I'm looking at one of the Hot Wheels right now. It has the scroll, the flash from the beret, the Ranger dagger, and there's four objects. And I forget. Oh, the airborne wings. So they're all in that camo. as silhouettes, but that's what makes up that camo. So if anybody has that old Airborne Ranger Hot Wheel, the camo one with a nostalgia front end on it, look at the camo pretty close and you'll see those silhouettes, those four silhouettes in there that make up that camo.
I love that too. And that's another good asking point. You know, when you're coming up with the designs of this, the Airborne Ranger, and you've had a lot of great ones over the years, are you designing these? You have a lot of input in them. You know, who's putting it all on paper and then getting it on the truck?
I think a lot of it, you know, we went to the red, white, and blue as Rangers, as the three Rangers, me, Ross, and Kevin. And Mikey's truck, the super truck was black and gold, you know, obviously the Army colors. We were going to start trying to recruit the Army, you know, as a sponsor too. So there was different thoughts on different deals. But I guess I was the brainchild of most of it. I mean, I remember when, you know, the 9/11 hit and man, everybody went to red, white, and blue, which is great. You know, it was great, but and it's great for the country. But, you know, we had it first, you know, and at least I can claim that, you know, and then there was another couple other trucks up there that went red, white, and blue before that time too. But that was always in our hearts, you know, our hearts and soul to have that red, white, and blue on there. And with that said, now the times have changed. People have changed, society's changed. And, there's sometimes when I pull back and I draw back from all that, you know, like I said, I just want to sit back and watch what happens and, you know, go pick somebody up and dust them off and say, all right, let's try this way. You know, let's try to do this now, you know, instead. And that's what changed to the Marauder. You know, the Marauder was brought out in Vegas by one of my good friends too. He helped me a lot, Dave Klingman, you know, and he sponsored me and he gave me a shop down there, and that's where that truck was born. I stayed down there for 2 years building that truck, and the Marauder was born. And it actually had a name. You'll see some of the names out there in some of the pictures. It says Death from Above, which was an old airborne motto between 82nd Airborne and 101st Airborne. They fight over it, you know, and you can only Google it and see who claims that motto, you know. But it was that death name. It was kind of, you know, a little, like I said, there was that change, that changing what's going on. So being Airborne Ranger, I was trying to help out an airborne, you know, motto. So then I thought, okay, you don't want that. And it wasn't that the airborne community didn't want it. It was, you know, promoters, we'll say, you know, and there's probably some slack from certain fans, you know, that don't like it. And I understand, you know, I understand it's a kid's show, you know, and it's a family show, you know. And so we went with Marauder. I thought, all right, I'm going to go right back to my roots of being a Ranger. And what was a Ranger? Well, you know, I always wanted to have a truck called Marauder. Well, I guess now's the time, you know, and that was named for Merrill's Marauders, you know, one of the World War II units, Ranger units that went pretty much marched and fought. And they, a lot of them died just from, you know, gangrene, you know, a lot of sicknesses in the jungle sicknesses. So that was dedicated in my 25th year. That's why the name is still silver on the side. It says Marauder, but on the back, it still says Airborne Ranger. And that's that was that dedication. So with that said, the times kind of changed my heart, you know, and the experiences that I've gone through changed. And I guess I project that on my trucks too, you know. But there was things that had to be done, you know, and we did them, and we just made it simple. And I love the truck. It's flat black, and I can go to an auto parts store and find flat black and fix it real quick. You know, and it helps me a lot. But you know, I love this truck. This chassis was built by Craig Christensen. Has Pablo Huffaker's shocks on it, Dan Patrick's housings. You know, and it rocks and rolls. You know, when I put it together, pretty well. It goes up in the air and lands pretty smooth, and it takes care of me. And that way I can do my job in there, you know, and be safe. So we call her Black Betty. One of the songs that she goes out to is Black Betty. So rock and roll song. I'm probably dating myself there, but yeah. But yeah, I love this truck.
You know, being that your truck represents the military, have you ever had the opportunity to do any cool truck displays, maybe at a military base or such?
Yeah, we go out. It seems like almost every year, one of the military bases that still does stuff is Hawthorne. Hawthorne's a depot for different things. I probably don't want to mention what they're for right now, but it's a depot where a lot of different things take place. You know, a retirement of the different items. You know, but they celebrate Armed Forces in May. May is usually Armed Forces Month or Armed Forces Week, Armed Forces Weekend. And they're like one of the only bases left that actually celebrate that. So we like to go there a lot. We're going to go there this year. We try to do the parades. You know, we'll wide load the truck through the parade because it's pretty much the safest way to get it through. The motor likes to get hot. Actually, the old motor likes to get hot. This new motor is pretty cool. It stays pretty cool, but that's probably the length of where I've gone with that. You know, I do went up to battalion when the three of us Rangers were together. We took it up to battalion and displayed it right at battalion at the quad, they call it, right on the middle of the three companies, Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, and Delta Company, or it would actually be headquarters company, and they liked it a lot. You know, a lot of feedback from Rangers up there, and that was up in Tacoma.
Well, good old Derek's back in the comments, and he says, how old are you? So do you have any – we'll give you the opportunity to fire back. Do you have any good Derek Ritter stories?
Oh, yeah. Ask him about falling off my trailer. Oh. Underneath, looking straight up at it, you know. That was so funny. And the problem is I missed the whole thing. Because Anthony, his son, is bringing the truck into the shop. So my zoomies face up, right? And I'm looking at all this dust coming off of the ceiling. I'm like, well, at least we're cleaning the ceiling off, you know, as the truck's going into the shop. And so I'm watching Anthony, and I got the kill box on, you know, the RI, and on him. So I'm making sure, you know, he doesn't run through the wall, the back wall or anything, which he won't, you know. It's just, you know, being safe. And next thing you know, I look over and Derek's outside the door there, dusting himself off underneath the trailer. And I'm like, what the hell happened to you? I fell off the trailer. He slipped on some oil and did like a somersault. And he wound up underneath the trailer, looking straight up underneath the trailer. And I'm like, oh, my God. You know, it's just, I have a lot of stories about Derek. But
that's he says fake. Last one. He says fake news.
Yeah. He wishes.
Oh, man. But I can tell you, what isn't fake news is our podcast here tonight. So, again, if you guys are enjoying what we're doing here tonight with Ranger Joe Cypher, make sure you like this video and you share it all across social media. Still have a lot more stories. We want to catch up with Joe as we continue on his timeline. So make sure you like and share this video. Another one of your longtime competitors has popped in. He's driven all sorts of different trucks. BJ Johnson. He says, love you, buddy. Lots of good times together.
Yeah, BJ and I had a lot of good times too. BJ and Craig too. Craig Christensen at the same time. And then BJ would come by the shop whenever he could. And I think he was driving Monster Patrol or Barefoot at that time. And, he would come by and have a lot of fun. In fact, my grandson is named BJ and I just love that name. As soon as my daughter chose that name and my son-in-law chose that name, I was like, yeah, that's a cool name. And we've got a Gas Monkey 1/24 scale Gas Monkey Hot Wheel up here, signed by BJ to BJ. So I'll never let BJ have it, my BJ have it, until he, you know, turns 18 or 20 or something like that. That way he doesn't open a box or destroy it, you know.
Yeah, and Mike Minner says, I watched Derek fix a corner in like 6 minutes. I don't know.
Yeah, Derek and Anthony, his son, they are badass. They know what they're doing. Derek's my crew chief, and Anthony's my crew chief. And I don't know, I guess I got to name them, you know, Alpha Chief and Bravo Chief. But I think Anthony should be Alpha Chief, you know. Derek should be number two, Bravo Chief. So ask him about that. Ask me about starting a truck.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Or rag on him too hard.
Klamath Falls. Ask me about that one. And then his son gets in there and just fires it right up, you know. I'm like, what's wrong with you?
No questions asked, but hey, we you know, we have Mike Mannard in the comments. He's in a lot of our comments are every episodes, and of course he's one of the many dads behind the mini monsters, and you know, his being the warhead. We always ask everybody, you know, what are your thoughts on the mini monsters, but just maybe a little twist. Do you ever think there could be a hand controlled mini monster out there one day?
If there was a chance that a kid needed to do that or really wanted to do that in his heart, I'd be the first one there if they let me know to help him out, you know. And I have a foundation, you know, doesn't do that well right now, but it would help him, you know, with what it could. BJ, my grandson, has a touch of autism, and it's called Asperger's. And he is he's my little rain man. He is, that kid was 4 years old carrying a phone around in his hand and knew what to do with it when he was 4 years old. He was downloading apps and, you know, different games and stuff. So, he's very, I call him my little brainiac too. You know, he's very, and if anybody I'd like to see get one of those mini monsters, we've got him an off-road go-kart, you know, between the family. The family helped out with this go-kart, and it was supposed to be here at Christmas, but it finally got here in January, and we put it together for him. So he drives that, and I don't think he knows it, but I'm trying to groom him for that, you know, to step up into those mini monsters. He hasn't been at a show where they've been at the show with me yet, but you know, one of these days I'm sure he is, and I'm gonna even Mike, if Mike's at the show, I'm asking him to show BJ that truck, you know, and see what BJ thinks, you know. And I'm not gonna push it on him. I don't want to push anything on anybody, you know, but I want if he wants that chance, you know, I give BJ that chance. And then, like I said, if there's a kid out there that has locomotion problems like I have, you know, just let me know. I'll try to help them out too, you know, especially in those. I love those little trucks. Oh my God. You know, and that's the thing. I love driving monster trucks. I love doing the things I do for people and making them stand up and just clap and shout, you know, but I also like to watch monster trucks. I'm big time on that too. I mean, I'll be the first one out of my truck and run into the fence to watch the guy after me freestyle, you know, and I just love watching it, you know, unless we have, you know, some type of broken deal. I'm at the fence, you know, can't pull my helmet off fast enough, you know. And I love watching those little trucks in the same respect. Oh my God, those little kids get in there and oh my God, they just put on a show, you know. And that I hope in the future, you know, COVID kind of screwed a lot of that stuff up, but I hope in the future that grows, you know, that the mini monster stuff grows, you know, because we were talking about mega monsters, you know, the mega trucks and stuff. And but now, like I said, my thought process has changed a little bit. Another evolution, you know. Okay, that door's closed, and let's open this door and let's help out some kids or at least my grandson to get into something like that. Let him see those little mini monsters and get him in one and see if he wants to drive it, you know. But like I said, it's all evolution for him too. I'm not gonna push it on him. He's 8 years old now, so gotta pace him a little bit, you know.
Yeah, and you know, definitely no rush, that's for sure. And there's so many avenues to go down. Right. I saw another follow-up from Derek Ritter. He says, because I'm too big now. Maybe he's too big to get in the truck, but I know very, very few times you've had people other than yourself drive Airborne Ranger. I know one of them was David Klingman. What's it been like for other people to get in the truck and actually drive it? It's got to be a lot different than some other trucks.
Yeah, it's, you know, I get up there and tell them to show, and you know, I remember the first day I had to drive it. You know, I drove it outside my first shop to put the big tires on it to take a promotional picture, you know, of it. And man, it's scary, you know. But like I said, luckily the training I had behind me was from the VA system. The guy had a old Impala car, and he had a brake on the passenger side, a brake pedal that he could stomp on if, you know, whoever was driving, he got out of control, you know, he could stomp on the pedal and stop the car at least, you know. And I'm like looking at that and going, I said, is that for you? You know, and I'm teasing the guy, you know, of course I'm giving him shit like I do everybody, you know, and I told him, I said, you won't need that for me, you know, but, it's gotta be a challenge. I remember when Craig Christensen, I was late to getting back to a show for some reason, and they had to move the trucks from outside the arena into the arena because they were all on display. So he got in my truck, said, oh, I'll move it. So he literally had his knee up to his chest, because at that time the pedals were up on a pedestal so that the hand control rods were shorter that were going to him. And now in this truck, they're made as a normal vehicle with hand controls in it. That way I can pull my hand controls out of the way and I can put an able-bodied person in that truck because everything's adjustable. But anyway, yeah, he had his foot up to his chest and would not take his foot off that brake pedal. So,
yeah, Derek said, do you tell them where the fuel shutoff is?
Yeah, I tell everybody, and you know, Derek knows there's a fuel shutoff and a fuel on. So it's and that's what's funny, you know, it's Anthony got up there and figured it all out. <You know? laughs> And my little buddy could not figure it out. Oh my God, I'll have to tell you the story sometime. It's quite the story.
Well, I know a lot of stories, a lot of memories are made running events for Monster Jam. Of course, that's, you know, the largest promoter of monster trucks around. And your truck was such a big player, and really still is in a lot of retrospects, especially now as a lot of fans go back and watch a lot of the old episodes from TNN and back in the day, Speed Channel. Do you remember the first time you were approached by Monster Jam to compete at one of their events?
I don't recall the first one, but I do recall the years, you know, getting bigger and bigger for me. There was a year that we were busy, you know, January 1st for 16 weekends. And they weren't all Monster Jam shows, but probably, you know, 2/3 of them were. And man, we got home after those 16 weeks and we threw the truck in the shop and we went to sleep for, we ate and slept for a week, you know, and that was it. Then the second week we were like, all right, we got to get back on it because we got another show coming up, you know. So, but yeah, they kept me busy. I remember in Tacoma Dome, I forget the gentleman's name that came in from Monster Jam and asked me to become a Hot Wheel. And I'm like, okay, you know. And like I said, I reverted right at that moment back to being a Hot Wheel kid, you know, and having Hot Wheels when I was a kid. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, that's, you know, that's one of my dreams. So that, you know, and that was a dream that, that transpired, you know, became real. So, I'll always remember that about them, you know.
And make sure to keep those questions coming as we keep moving along here on the podcast. We got a great comment here from Christopher Allen. He says, hi, Ranger Joe. It's no secret the World Finals has grown into a must-see event. That being said, how does it feel to been a part of history being at the World Finals in 2000?
Yeah, that was fun. You know, that was a lot of fun. It was fun, but it was also a heartbreak to me too. You know, I lost a front drive line and the truck started walking around itself and the rear end tried to come around the front end, and finally I lost control of it and I smashed into the wall. And then I was racing Deborah, Medusa. I was racing Deborah in her Medusa truck, and man, had I not done that, she spun out in one corner and here I'm hitting the wall. So it was just it was one of those deals that was a negative, but yet a positive, you know. So it turned me around. I looked at my truck a little differently then. I'm like, all right, my hunk of junk needs to change a little bit here, you know. So,
yeah, you know, it's interesting looking back at that first World Finals, especially now. There's so many new fans that come into Monster Jam and such new generations. And I think a lot of the go-tos is to go back and rewatch all the World Finals. And now you look back, that was over 20 years ago now, that first World Finals. And just to see how much the sport changed, I think that's your perfect example. You can watch World Finals 1, and then you go back to watch the latest World Finals that was in Orlando. You know, what does that look like for you, having been there at that first one and then seeing where that event has just grown?
Yeah. Yeah. Like Derek, he has seen every Monster Jam in Vegas there was. So he's got that under his belt, you know, and I wish I could say that, but there's some that I had to miss. And then I hated missing them because of the, I call it magic. I call it monster truck magic. The stuff that goes on in those shows, you know, that went on in that stadium in Vegas, Sam Boyd Stadium, was just, it was magic, you know, it made people stand up in the seats. And to miss that, you know, was, it sucked, you know, and granted, now I think it sucks because they moved it to Florida, you know, but that's their home, you know, that's their home. And that's, you know, that's the wise choice. That would be the wiser choice to do that that way. Yeah, I miss it. I miss watching it. Because like I said, the evolution of the and I call them kids, you know, and, you know, there's still a couple in there, you know, like Tom and Avenger and I forget who else is still in there, but those guys are still hanging in there. But man, some of those tricks they can do, sometimes I lay awake and thinking, you know, I can't sleep at night sometimes. And so I start thinking about the truck and thinking about things. And one of the things I think about is like, well, how can I adapt my hand controls so I can start doing that stuff? Because, you know, my hands are busy enough as it is, let alone trying to shift the thing into reverse or to first and hit the brake and get off the brake and maybe tap the rear steering if you're on the rears, you know, or what, you know, what would I have to do, you know? And I've got one trick on my sleeve that I'm going to do, but I need to put a wheelie bar on it to do it. And but that's probably the only one I could get away with right now, with the limitation of the hand controls I have. I've seen some out there that the total hand control is in your two hands, in both hands, you know, where everything's there, shifting, steering, rear steering. I shouldn't say rear steering because this the kid that drives this car is a more of a track car, asphalt track car. And but anyway, he drives very well, and he's a quad, and he literally takes one hand and ties it to the hand control with a Velcro strap. And he does very well, you know, he does very well in that sport. But those are the things I think about, you know, because it just amazes me. Like I said, I love watching them as much as I love driving them, you know. So when Monster Jam's on now, if I'm crossing through the channels and I see it, oh my God, you know, everything stops in my house. Like, oh, turn that up.
You never stop being a fan. And I always love the science and a lot of the tricks with the trucks. And as you know, that's always a big part of where the sport is now, the evolution of what these trucks can do. I have to be a fantasy man right now. Have you ever thought about backflipping Airborne Ranger?
Yeah, we did. We when it was built in Vegas, they mandated that it had that extra bar in it, extra hoop bar going around your seat. So I took it upon myself to put another bar in there, and I stagger attached the bars. You know, I staggered them, so all three bars were staggered all the way up and around and over the other side. So it has a triple cage in it. Doesn't mean it's going to withstand that. You know, I think is to take a truck upside down. I don't know if you can see this guy, but take a truck upside down and land on that. You know, now all the weight is up here, is on top of you, so to speak. And that, if you're going to test that cage, man, that your cage better be squared away. You know, there's dumpster bars, they call them. The nickname for them is that I still have to put in mine, and I want to put them in mine. The problem is, you know, are they going to hamper me getting out of the truck if the truck's on fire? Are they going to hamper me getting in the truck, period, you know? But mainly that safety issue. What if the truck's on fire and I'm upside down? Because everybody thinks, oh, yeah, you'll be all right. You can do this. And when you're upside down, no. I've been upside down a lot, and everything comes to a halt because you have to orient where you're at, you know. And I've been upside down so much that I can reach out and grab the dirt and throw it at the guys with it. You're all right. Yeah, get away from me. And I'm throwing rocks at them and stuff, you know. But that comes with time, you know. And and I hate to say it, but practice. I don't want to turn the truck over to practice, you know. But yeah, it's another deal that you contend with about backflipping. It's you know, it can create a lot of destruction. I've seen a lot of them come out of it, but I've seen probably a lot more just destroy themselves, you know. But I want to do it. I do want to do it. So
definitely would be a sight to see. And we got a comment here from Gary Schott. He says, Joe is always fun to run with. Just don't try to arm wrestle him or he'll probably lose.
I don't know. Gary's got some big arms now. He's a little pit bull. I usually win, but I don't think I can win Gary anymore. I'm 57 years old. There's the answer to Derek's question. But yeah, I'm 57 years old, and Gary's still in that young age where I think he'll slam me through the table, you know.
We'll have to do a match, a match point here or something, rubber match. We'll figure
that'd
it out.
Cool. That'd be way cool.
I got a couple more questions have come in. Here's one from Brent Shetler. He says, do you still have the cane made out of chain that you had at Evergreen Speedway when I met you in the pits?
Oh, yeah. I use it constantly. It's in the back of my truck and the back seat on the floor. It's so heavy and made out of chain, and I have to keep it on the floor. Otherwise, it'll tear up the, you know, the fabric or the upholstery. But, yeah, I still have it, and I still use it. You know, and I like it because it actually keeps my wrist in shape. You know, it makes you – that thing's heavy. It's made out of a real chain. And it exercises your wrist for your forearms, so to speak.
Gary Schott just bounced back in. He says he's 60 years old, so he's just a little under than him, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, you be careful what you wish for, Gary.
Oh, man.
Well, I got another question in here from Christopher Allen. He says, who approached you about putting Airborne Ranger in the Monster 4x4 Masters of Metal video game? I know you're also in Monster Jam Maximum Destruction. So how'd you get your truck in video games?
I think Monster Jam had a lot to do with the first game that I'm in. Now, the 4x4 Masters of Metal, I'm reading it on the deal here. I don't know about that one. I haven't seen that one. And I hope it's not there without my permission, so to speak. But anyway, the first one was definitely Monster Jam. They talked about being in a game and stuff like that. This other one I don't know about, but I think I've heard of that game, but I didn't know anything about that.
We have another comment here from Chris Walquist. He says, how have you enjoyed running on the Monster Truck Insanity Tour?
Chris Walquist?
Yes.
Insanity Tour is cool. Awesome. I love running them all. You know, I try to run them all, but then, man, there's times when you just can't run them all, you know. I've slowed down. I try to do 20 to 25 shows a year. You know, I know Craig, what is there, 58 weeks in a year, something like that, 52 weeks in a year. I think Craig was, man, he was, for a while there, he was running 48 weekends out of the year, you know, and that's just crazy. Even he slowed down, you know, he slowed down a little bit too. So you try to pace yourself now. You know, I try to work out every day. I can probably work out for 2 days and then I have to take a break, you know. But you learn what and how hard and what exercises to do and what not to do anymore. And, you know, but I do it so the truck doesn't bust me up so much. You know what I mean? I mean, you've got some awesome seats nowadays, awesome safety belts, you know, awesome safety gear, helmets, the Hans, I wear a Hans, your headgear on the seat, your shoulder gear. But I don't care what anybody says, it's going to, unless you're young, like those kids in Monster Jam, the ones that are over, let's say 40, you know, you're going to feel it, you know.
Another question came in from Mike Menner. He says, do you do your own motor work?
No, I don't do my motor work. I have my buddy, Greg Jones. We started out as a monster truck drag boat team, and he handles the motor part. And then there's a machinist that we use, and his name is Mike, and I call him Mad Mike. Mad Mike's Machining. That's not really. I blew up my motor after 23 years. I finally blew that one up. So, and with that said, you know, I had good guidance with Greg, Greg Jones. He's a drag boat guy. His dad was Sonny Jones. I don't know if anybody knows of Sonny, but Sonny held a lot of licenses as far as, you know, the drag boat, the different disciplines of drag boats and different, you know, categories that they have. And Greg still races to this day. You know, he races his drag boat too. His drag boat is called Back in Black. So.
Got a question from one of our former guests. He's known as the Chair Destroyer. If you watched the episode, you would know. He says, "Hey, Joe, a formal apology for destroying the cars in Rapid City, South Dakota a few years back. Left you with just a flat track to pop a tire on. Sorry."
Yeah, that happens. You know, it's just had those Chinese tires, and I've got some now. They're, instead of being a six ply, they're brand new 10 plies, and you know, a lot of that, you wanted the lightweight tires, lightweight rims, which I have, but sometimes they bounce up and bite you because the little bittiest car part goes through it and punctures a hole in it, you know, and it can happen with. It can happen with a regular tire, you know, or a 10 ply or Goodyear or 10 ply Firestone. You know, it's just the luck of the draw. Sometimes you see those car parts sticking out and you want to drive around them instead of, you know, or drive or fly over them, you know, and all right, I'm going to get over this set because it looks like if I come down on that, it's going to pop all four tires, you know, so.
Gotta love David Tucker. We love him. We want to see him when he explodes a chair. That's what we'll say if anybody hasn't seen his
talking
episode.
Talking about popping tires. He popped in his chair.
He popped the chair on his episode. But nonetheless.
How does one pop a chair?
Well, he said he had a flat tire and his chair went sideways. So if you want to see that, go rewatch that episode.
You lost that episode.
Yeah, it's in our video archives. I'll send you the link to that too if you want to jump on that. But hey, another question just came in from my buddy Brian Anger. He says, "Which paint scheme was your favorite?"
You know, the red, white, and blue Charlie. We called it Charlie, the Charlie chassis, and then it went from we called it Charlie Camo because it was the same chassis but with a different body. That nostalgia front end, that camo. So between those two, you know, those are my favorite colors, you know, and of course, I'm always wearing black, you know, I always wear black, and, you know, that truck being black with American flag on it coming out of it is just, it's what I've always wanted, to do, and, you know, and I've chalked that up to been there, got a t-shirt for it, you know, type thing. So I like that, and then, you know, running close second is the camel one that I hid those silhouettes in, so.
So I know with the Charlie Camel body, you had a different front clip on that truck. I mean, it was just a lot of different going on. You know, what was the thought process of changing that truck over with the not only with the design but with the body?
Where that body came about was I had these they were called these James Hot Rod front ends, and they were built by Jim Lund of Lund Industries. You know, the accessory company Lund, and for trucks. And so we had them sponsored to us, and we had three different prototypes. One was I'm doing a little decompression here, but one was a heavy prototype, one was a light prototype, and one was the actual prototype. We'll say the middle one was the prototype. So I decided, you know, these are just sitting here. I need to, you know, get these on here and get these out there. And so I started. I had the body that those actually the year that those actually would adapt to. And so we adapted them over to that body. And it wound up working really well, you know, and like I said, then we decided that I keep looking at the toy. So I'm going to change it and I'm going to make it camo, you know, and I just thought that, you know, it would, it was around those times where, you know, everybody, like I said, was on the bandwagon of red, white, and blue. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to change, you know, I'm going to change something up here. You know, I'm going to throw a wrench in everybody's gears and especially mine and get something done here different, you know. So we came out with that camo style truck, and that has to run a close second.
And I know you took the camo all sorts of places. And I know one of the big ones was, you know, the last event, the Pontiac Silverdome.
Yeah.
It was like such a historic building for monster truck fans. Also like being in such hollow grounds and being the one of the last ones there.
That's exactly it. It's a hollow ground, you know, for the evolution of a lot of that, a lot of our sport starting out in that building and, you know, excelling from there, from then on. It was awesome. It was awesome to be in such a big building, you know, and have so much room. I never had so much room to where I could take that truck and bounce it off a car and hit the throttle and try to get it to wheelie. And I wound up doing my first wheelies in that dome. And that was just awesome to me. I didn't care whether I won, win, lose, or draw. I did wheelies, you know, and that's what I've always wanted the truck to do. But most of the events we did, I just didn't have the room and I didn't have the timing, you know. And then with that said, I was always working on my timing of, you know, a slap wheelie. So it made me feel good. My sons were there, my twin boys, you know, Just and Josh, they were there and, it felt really good to have that accomplishment under my belt finally.
Yeah. And we had one of those strong wheelies that you did that night in our hype video.
Right.
And I know you love the wheelies. What made your truck such a wheelie machine?
That was Charlie Camel came about. Once it came about, that camouflage, we decided, I just had like 3 months of not doing anything in the winter, no shows. And I looked at the truck and I'm like, I said to myself, I'm going to put that motor in the back. I think I'm going to put that motor in the back. And they looked at me like, are you crazy? I'm like, yeah, you just cut it off here, put it back there. And, you know, and you got all this stuff in your head of how easy it's going to be, you know, and then next thing you know, it's not so easy, you know, but it took me really pretty much 2 months to get that thing in the back of the truck and get it in the proper alignment and make it work. And that actually helped. That helped that truck to wheelie. That helped that truck perform a lot better. It was, believe it or not, a lot easier on that truck because that truck still had coilover shocks. Which were the old Custers or I forget the new name they went to, but for a coilover to bounce and actually wheelie was impressive to me because I didn't want the shock Himes. Those were little shock Himes compared to the Himes that are on this thing now, you know, as compared to the shock shafts that are on this thing now. They were tiny. They were like having a toothpick on that truck, you know, and you wondered if it put all the weight up on, in the air, if it was going to snap the shocks off, you know. So, but it did really well.
And it's that time of the podcast. It's time for Explain That Photo.
Uh-oh.
Well, don't say uh-oh just yet. We're going to kick it off with our first photo. I think you were talking about this one a little bit earlier.
Oh, yeah. That's the same truck sitting right here on my shelf. So that is Charlie Camo. And if you look at those silhouettes, you'll see a Ranger Scroll. You'll see airborne wings. You'll see a Ranger Dagger. And you'll see a silhouette or a flash, flash silhouette from the Beret. I believe there's three colors that use it. And then there's one neutral color that doesn't. I think the brown is the neutral color. But the black and the green have those silhouettes in them. And there she is, yep. That's Pontiac there. First wheelies. Oh, yeah, that's the one. I had to drive it outside with hand controls. And you can see the front end where it says Lund, right there where that X is. That's the four-link. Reverse four link, I call it, system, where the four links came from the front of the truck to the front of the axle. And right behind me, you'll see the other yellow four links that are in the what would be considered the traditional position. But I ran that truck into the wall here in Reno at the stadium. And Craig Christensen had me take it up to Utah. and he helped me rebuild that, and he helped me put those four links to the true, the traditional four link position from the center of the truck to the back of the axle. And this was Alpha. This was Alpha. Alpha was designed. We wanted American Anthem, but we also wanted the Sua Sponte colors from the flash of the beret. That beret I have on has the red, the orange, the yellow, you know, and there's supposed to be some green in there, but for some reason I got talked out of the green. I believe it, Greg Jones, I believe, convinced me, not the drag wheel guy, not to put green on. I guess it was bad luck then. And, so I left the green out, but, yeah, that was a lot of the colors of the Ranger, colors there, besides an American Anthem on the top. Yep. There's the ride truck, and there's those hot rod front ends. And that was done at one of my old shops, just a display deal and to show off the two trucks. And you can see the truck is, the motor is still in the front in that year right there. But shortly after that, that's when I took it and moved it to, the motor is in the front. And shortly after that, I took and moved it to the rear. Can't tell which arena this is at.
That's Anaheim.
Is that Anaheim?
Yes.
Yeah, that's Bravo. Bravo was one of those, since we were into the dirt track racing truck, you know, with Mikey driving our super truck, that truck body was a super truck body, actually. And it was made up of plastic fiberglass, and I think there was some metal on it. So it was a combination of having to bolt everything together, which it worked well. But for a monster truck, I think the monster just shook it apart eventually. So that was a cool little truck body. And then you can see the suspension is different there. Motor's still up front. The front shocks are straight up and down still. Whereas I tilted them back after later on, I started tilting in things inward and outward, you know, and experimenting with different things. But yeah, that's the Bravo truck.
And we got one more for you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was driving Bigfoot that day.
Oh, wow.
No, he got the jump on me. I always love racing against those guys. Those guys are so good to me, man. They were always cool. Got a lot of laughs out of them guys, and just like I said, those are my heroes. That's one of my heroes right there, and I love pulling the line against them. You always have it in your heart and soul to beat them, but sometimes they bend you over and spank you a little bit and show you what's what, you know.
Oh man. Well, you got anything else for us?
Yeah, so we just looked at the ride truck. I know we've talked about it a little bit here. What I found so fascinating is on your old website from, gosh, maybe 20 years ago now, you wrote on their future plans, and it's to build another monster truck equipped with a wheelchair lift to give disabled individuals the opportunity to ride in a monster truck. And that's exactly what you accomplished with that ride truck, you know, to talk to us about finally getting that ride truck off the ground.
Yeah, there was a... You know, in reality, there were some great things that happened with that truck. And then, of course, there was some disappointments, you know. And that truck did. It was a common dream. You know, the dream was always a mine to do that, because I was the paraplegic and I wanted to give kids a ride in that truck. Or I wanted to take it to children's hospitals and get them in there with wheelchairs, you know, pull all them seats out and put tie down wheelchair tie downs in it and give them a ride. Not the rides that you would, you know, you don't want to scare them or nothing, but you want to just putter around the parking lot and let them hear the motor and feel like what it feels. Let them feel the 66 inch tall tires, all those ribs on those tires vibrating across the parking lot, you know. And so that was the high point, you know. The low point was I blame only myself for this, but I did not keep track of that truck, and I should have kept a closer, I should have pulled the reins in a little bit on that truck, you know, held that truck back a little bit. There was a lot of, structure that I didn't demand, you know, of that truck or a lot of things. I, you know, like I said, I let the reins go a little bit too far on that truck. I think that truck's since been sold. I don't know where it went. The rumor is it's been sold. But like I said, you know, there's high points and low points in it, and I'm glad that that truck did succeed. Now, it succeeded in my personal values. It succeeded probably 10%. That truck can go 100, or if I build another one, it could go 100%, and I could make it go 100% and follow the dream that I want it to follow, to put, you know, smiles on disabled kids' faces, or light up their world a little bit, or let them drive. I know there's a lot of these little kids that hang out at Monster Jam's events, at least in Vegas they did, you know, and they always ask me about driving my truck, and I said, you grow up, you start working out, get some muscles. I want you to be able to pull yourself in that truck like I used to do, and then I'll let you drive it, you know. And there's one of them that does that, you know, to this day. I don't know if he still works out, but he was, you know, but at least it gives them something to shoot for, you know. With that said, you gotta watch the disability too. There's hundreds, thousands of disabilities, you know, and that's what I learned through my lifetime. And I may have a disability that's the same, and another guy called a paraplegic just like me, but he's not going to be the same paraplegic. You know, it depends upon where he broke his back, what was destroyed, what was, I'm an incomplete, they call me an incomplete para. So I broke my back across the L3, L4 area, which gave me nerve damage at L1 and L2. Across that area is where they call it a horsetail, where the nerves fan out, they start fanning out to the body. So if you want to break your back anywhere, that's the place to break it. You know, that it's going to give you more of a chance to regain a lot of ability back, which that's exactly what happened to me. If I didn't have the VA in Palo Alto, California, putting me on the parallel bars and making me drag my feet across the parallel bars back and forth, I wouldn't be walking to this day, you know. And so with that said, every disability, especially when it comes to quadriplegics or paraplegics, every person's going to be different. So the ability, you really have to watch the ability, you know. But that's where that truck would have filled in that niche. If they couldn't drive, well, at least they can ride in it, you know. And here I was going to make up this little medal, you know, because I did a lot of the wheelchair sports, and I got a lot of medals for different things. And I wanted to make up a medal that was just specific to the monster truck, and made me like an entire shape or something. And here's your medal. You rode in it, like getting the wings, like when you were a kid. And this is probably dating myself, but United Airlines used to, when you were a kid, used to fly United, and they'd give you a little badge with little wings on it. Said United Airlines, you know, and you know, why not? Why not give a kid something that, you know, hopefully charges him up, you know, and gets in his heart and soul.
Got a great comment here from good old Dallas Glenn Rogers. And Dallas says, I remember a couple years ago seeing you in Stockton with an 18 truck filled, getting a perfect score of 30. So what was that like?
That was awesome. It was a lot of freakish things, a lot of those magic moments that I talk about monsters being magic. That magic moment happened for me where I went over a bus stack and it pulled itself right into a wheelie, and I walked it out of that wheelie, flat on my back in the chair, in the seat, and looking up straight up at the, and I knew if I had to give it any more gas, it was going to go over backwards. But I walked it out of it, tapping the brakes, throttling, you know, just that perfect magic moment. And besides that, the track that they built there, oh my God, it was just awesome. There was a lot of room, you know, just like a Pontiac stadium, but outdoors, you know. It was just awesome. And they built the track well. They built the track to entertain. And that's what happened. You know, it was just one of those magic moments. I was in the right place at the right time, right seat at the right time, right truck at the right time.
You know, I was reading a lot on your old website here too. I saw, of course, a lot of monster truck teams they're always on a lot of different programs on TV and different news stations and networks. I thought this one was interesting because, you know, I'm an old 90s dork. You're on Nick News. Well, how'd that come about, being on Nick News? You remember that?
Yeah, I think Nickelodeon was, again, one of those deals around Monster Jam. and I forget. I'll have to look that up. I have that on file on a tape somewhere. It's probably one of those VHS tapes. Date myself again.
But, what's that?
yeah, who knows what that is, huh? You got to be over 50 to know what that is. But yeah, Nick was there, and they were doing some kind of special. But it was a cool deal, you know. It was cool for the kids to see, and again, one of those times where the popularity of the trucks was just, you know, it was headed straight up in the air like a rocket. You know, it was just gaining speed. You know, I'm pretty sure even there was a comparison at one time of us compared to NASCAR. That we were overshadowing them pretty well with what we were doing, you know, because, and back then the biggest stunts were, you know, jumping the biggest mountain sideways and biggest car stack, bus stack sideways, and, you know, doing donuts and maybe side surfing here and there, but you didn't mean to side surf, you know, and I don't know what they call it now. I call it side surfing still, but that's when the popularity of that sport was just going up and up and up because of everybody was just loving what they did, you know, and you could see it in the teams. You could see it in the drivers. You could see it in the promoters, you know, they were just loving what they were doing, you know.
Talking about that, you know, Stockton show, Juan Munoz is in the comments, one of our past guests. So make sure to rewatch that episode if you haven't already. And he says, I was the track official for that Stockton show. Don't want to sound like a super fan, but it was really cool to see you and hang out up close. It was so cool as a driver to see you drive with your controls and how you move the truck around. What a beast.
Yeah. You try to get in it and tame the beast every time, you know, but the beast will rule you. I mean, the beast, you think you know how to drive that truck? Mm-mm. The minute you think that, it's going to show you something new and it's going to tell you, oh, get out of this situation, you know. And but that's the cool things about it. I learn every time I get in that seat, you know, no matter what. You know, that was a racetrack, a horse track, but the internals also looked like it was a roundy round track of some sort for cars. There was two other trucks after my freestyle, and I had a blown tire or something. I think I don't know if that was the same year, but I sat up. They wanted me to go to the back and fix the tire. I'm like, no, I'm sitting right here. I'm going to watch who's next, you know. And that was just my love. That's my love for the sport, is to watch. You know, I just love them, you know. And I was a fan before I was an owner, so you know, that was a cool track. That was an awesome track for, like I said, being at the right place in the right time.
You know, and as we wind down here with y'all, we've learned so much and really a lot of documented, a lot of incredible stories here on this podcast that stand the test of time. You've done so many incredible things. For you, what has been your favorite moment being a monster truck driver?
You know, it's a toss-up between, you know, creating this truck and treating that ride truck to, you know, that dream to come and have that ride truck come to, you know, we'll say a decent reality. I guess I would have to take my truck and my hand controls as the number one thing that ever happened. Not just for me, but for the Rangers and for the people, the fans, the people that are out there that that want to see magic, you know, happen. You know, and that's, like I said, monsters are magic to me. They will always be magic. And if you watch a lot of Monster Jam shows, you'll see things that, you know, you see that forward backflip deal that happened with, I forget the gentleman that was driving that truck, and I forget the truck's name. But anyway, it was said that was all planned, but I call that bullshit. You know, he wheelied across that track and he did that forward backflip because he was in the right position at the right time, and he landed it, and it turned over in the right position at the right time for him to land it, you know. And And if he has a problem with it, then that's fine. I don't care, but I know what I saw. I was there. So I saw it, and I was just, it doesn't fill my heart with being proven one person right and I'm wrong, or he's right, or, you know, or he's wrong. It proves my heart with showing people that look at this magic that happens, whether it was planned or not. It's magic for you, you know, and that's where I believe Monster Jam, you know, has gone. They've gone quite the ways, you know, with this magic, this monster truck magic deal, which I call magic, you know.
Definitely was an insane moment, but this is going to be one of my final questions. How did you, I mean, let's put it this way. What advice would you give to someone wanting to get their foot in the door in the industry?
Seek out, if they're going to get into industry and if say they're going to purchase a truck, you know, seek out all the trucks that are out there as far as the manufacturers that are out there for everything and try to, if you have the money, then spend the money on the best stuff, you know, and pace yourself, you know. You got to learn the truck. You got to, it's seat time. That would probably be the biggest thing for me is the more you get in the seat, the more you learn. It's all seat time. It's all seat time. That's why they have a university, or, you know, that's why Tom's the professor, you know, that's a reason. There's a reason for that, you know, and that's called seat time, you know, and that's to practice stunts without a body on it. So you can see where the truck's doing, what it's doing, why it's tilting one way, why it's not, you know, all these different angles, and hit the angles of those ramps at a certain, you know, certain speed, certain direction. But yeah, it's a matter of seat time and doing it right. You got to watch out. You got to watch out for different things. There's going to be pitfalls along the way. You know, there's going to be, you just got to watch out. You got to watch your back, you know, and then, but in the meantime, concentrate putting smiles on people's faces. That's another thing. Once you learn the truck, once you get your seat time in, then you'll be able to climb the mountain, you know.
And I'll take a spin off of that same question and just maybe for a different audience, you know, what advice would you have for an individual that, you know, might have a disability or they're looking for some sort of pick me up, get them back on track. What advice would you have for any of those individuals that are might be a little lost and trying to figure out where to go next?
You know, and that's the thing. It's number one, you have to know your disability. You have to know it for you, for the individual, inside and out. There's things that are going on with me that are going, you know, they're still, and they said, you know, that they're getting worse for me. And I was told about this years ago because I had good therapy, you know, good therapists, and I had the VA behind me, which down there in Palo Alto is one of the best spinal cord injury centers, I believe, to this day. So with that said, you know, you got to know what you can do and can't do. But don't ever give up. You know, if you have it in your heart and soul that you can do it, then do it. You know, it may take you baby steps. You know, you gotta crawl before you can walk, and you gotta walk before you can run, you know. And I had to learn that process all over again, that walking and the crawling and then the walking and the running. And I had to do it with wheels, you know, I had to do it with wheelchair. You know, and I'm coming from the side that I can see how many disabilities there are out there, you know, and there's so many. So, but if you believe that you can do it, if you physically believe you can do it, mentally believe you can do it, you know, call me up, let me know. I'll be the first one to help you out. You know, we'll see what we can do. You know, because I lay that out there for help for anybody that's in a chair or, you know, has a disability. And I think a lot of the people that are around me that have disabilities that know me, that, you know, you come knocking on my door, well, you better be ready for pain because I'm going to put you through the pain, you know, blood, sweat, and tears, you know, but you make it out of that, you're going to go somewhere, you know.
Definitely a great message you were sending, and, you know, it was an awesome time talking about your story tonight, but this is going to be the final question of the night. When it's all said and done, what do you want your legacy to be?
You know, the legacy is the Army men and the Hot Wheels. You know, the legacy is the paraplegic that the man that became a Ranger that became a paraplegic that became a monster truck driver, you know. And it's not over yet. You know, we'll see where else it goes. It's there's untold story still, you know, and there's a new chapter to this book. So I don't want it just to end in, you know, I always keep my hopes up and look to the future, you know, and keep my nose to the grind and see what else I can change, you know.
And you're not done yet. Some people are asking, like, well, where's Joe been? He's out there. You know, he's been driving for nearly 30 years, and you're not slowing down. I know it's a little rough patch at the time we are filming this, but, you know, sooner rather than later, I know we're going to see you in the Airborne Ranger, the Marauder, back out in action, and it's going to be a great time.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, wait for these great you know, this COVID thing's just got to end, you know, or we got to find a way around it, you know, somehow. But, yeah, I'm ready to go out there and entertain, you know, and that's all I want to do is just, I'm an entertainer that uses a blown alcohol monster truck to entertain with, you know, and that's all it's really is. You know, it's one of those type of sports that it grew from. I can tell you a lot of stories of what it came from and how the evolution of it transpired, but it's a lot of good stuff too. You know, I'm not trying to be negative about anything. I love my sport, you know, and I think it has a long ways to go still.
That's why we love it. Joe, it's an honor. It's a pleasure. I would be venture to say you are a legend in this sport. Thank you so much for being on this podcast here tonight. We hope to see you soon.
Cool, man. Thanks for having me again and appreciate it. This is my first social media deal and it's like, it's not so bad.
We're proud of you. You did it.
Thank you, Ranger Joe.
Yeah, I thought you were going to get
a great job.
Damn, or something like that. You know, I'm like, uh-oh, here we go. What do they do on social media?
you did. If you can do it, anybody can. Joe, we appreciate it.
Definitely a great job tonight.
All right, man. You guys take care.
Thank you, Joe.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, not else much to say. That's what the episode's for. It speaks for itself. You know, Joe Cypher really – proved a lot of people wrong and got into that sport and did a lot of things different than anyone else. And again, almost 30 years driving and he's still got a lot more to prove and to show off with the Airborne Ranger.
Well put, Phil. I mean, love the message he's sending, showing that despite of his disability, I mean, he can still drive a 10,000 pound truck and compete with the best of them. So definitely a great message from Ranger Joe tonight.
And we appreciate having him on. I know that twists his arm a little bit, but we got it done. And his story will forever live in our archives, just as a lot of the other people that were in our comment sections tonight. He's all part of history now here on the Monster Truck Outlaws of the West podcast. Go ahead. Who's doing it? Me, you.
Where can the people find these archived episodes?
If you're here on our Facebook page, thank you for tuning in on our Facebook page. Make sure you do like and share this video one more time. Make sure everybody that maybe couldn't tune in live can come back and check out Joe's episode at any time, as well as our past guests. David Tucker was in the comments, Dallas Glenn Rogers, Gary Schott, Juan Munoz. All those guys have had episodes with us. They're in our video section, our live tab. Just go up to our Facebook page, live podcast episodes. You'll see our entire library. From Hall of Famers to rising stars, we try to cover it all here on the West Coast, and Joe Cypher's story is among the rest now, so make sure you check it out there. And also, wherever you can download podcasts, audio only, so like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Stitcher, Amazon, or right, Audible, that's it, Amazon's platform, right, Audible. Wherever you can download the sound, wherever you can download your podcast, it's there. So you can check out all of our podcasts, audio only, wherever you can download podcasts. And again, if you like tonight's episode, make sure you also like our page. We'll have another great episode for you here next week. We'll dot the I's and cross the T's. and make sure we'll have a guest here next week. So make sure you stay tuned to the beginning of the week. We'll drop a teaser and we'll announce who will be joining us next on the Monster Truck Outlaws of the West podcast.
Yep. And if you are someone that wants to be on the podcast, or you have someone you want on, send us a message on our page and we'll get back to you. But we're not slowing down, as we always say. Another great week, and we're excited for next week.
Yes, we are. So until then, have a great weekend. If you're celebrating Easter, be safe, enjoy it, and we'll see you here next week.